joined on the green once again by contributor Larry Nagengast, who this week took a look at efforts to put together plans to reopen schools in some way, shape, or form this fall here in the first states. Larry, we appreciate you taking time to look at this issue and join us to talk about it on the green this week.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here, Tom.
Let's start with some larger context. President Trump says he wants schools to open this fall. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends reopening, saying there are health concerns associated with distance learning, but has said that local governments and local health officials should have a say in this. On the other side, a recent survey found 94% of school superintendents aren't ready to announce when they are going to reopen classrooms for the upcoming school year. There's a lot going on here, Larry. Is it fair to say that this is the same type of, I don't know if tension's the right word, or just kind of confusion, uncertainty that is playing out here in the first state as well?
Yeah, I would say probably more confusion and uncertainty than tension. The state's education community is certainly striving to get its reopening plans ready, just as all this pressure is building at the federal level. As you said, President Trump wants the schools to reopen. There was a parade of his advisors offering all sorts of reasons in support of that goal this week. Florida quickly announced that it will reopen its public schools next month, despite the ongoing coronavirus surge in that state. Now, make no mistake about it, returning to schools and opening them with something close to normal operations would be a very big positive. It would help parents get back to work. It would enable children to learn in a familiar environment. It would provide a tremendous emotional boost as well, and certainly all of that would be good for the economy. However, nationwide, there's a lot of concern about how to reopen schools safely when there are very few indications that the virus is slowing down. Current CDC guidelines, which may very well be revised in the next week or so, say that schools should not reopen unless there's a considerable decline in new infections, but exactly the opposite is happening in more than 40 states. Some epidemiologists fear that children could become silent spreaders of the virus. The National Education Association is skeptical of Trump's press for reopening. And, while Delaware is hardly a hot spot on the order of Florida, Texas, and Arizona, our residents were banned a few days ago for making non-essential trips to New York and New Jersey. And then Philadelphia added Delaware to its do not come list on Thursday. So, again, within our state's education community, I think I can express the consensus rather succinctly. Don't do it quickly, but do it safely.
And as I noted in the intro to this segment, the state is expected to weigh in with recommendations to guide districts and charters here. Can you give us kind of a thumbnail sketch of what the state will likely be offering them and how much those recommendations kind of hinge on when Delaware can move safely from phase two to phase three of reopening?
Well, okay. As you said, Secretary of Education Susan Bunting is expected to put out her recommendations next week. And pretty much everyone believes that what she's going to do is publish a summary of the recommendations that have been developed over the last month or so by the three working groups that have been studying the issue. The one thing that's likely to be a little bit new is that the Division of Public Health right now is tweaking the recommendations and making sure that everything that the Secretary of Education puts out are consistent with the state and federal health and wellness guidelines. As for aligning the school reopening with the state's reopening plan, let me note that the working groups developed recommendations that were linked to three different scenarios, essentially one on if the virus gets worse than it is now, whether it stays about the same, or whether conditions improve. In essence, if it gets worse, we're going to wind up going back to the remote learning environment that we had in the spring. If it gets better, we may very well have a pretty normal reopening. But based on almost everyone that I talk to, if conditions remain pretty much like they are now, we are looking at some kind of a hybrid arrangement. That would mean that some children would be learning in school and others would be learning remotely, and the two groups would wind up switching back and forth for as long as that's the status that remains in effect.
Now, ultimately, the districts and charters have to make their own plans and execute them. despite whatever the state puts out as recommendations. Is there kind of a consensus forming on what approach should be taken broadly by individual districts and schools?
I'm not quite sure that we can say that. I mean, the state's recommendations will amount to an extensive guide as to what the 19 school districts and the 22 charter schools should do. But again, the state isn't telling the local school authorities how to do it. The how-to part of this planning is what comes next, and it's going to be done at the local level. Every school entity will encounter similar problems, but it's conceivable that we could have as many as 40 different solutions. Yeah, probably not going to have 40 different ones, but that's certainly within the realm of possibility. There are going to be tweaks from district to district, charter to charter, depending upon the school's capacities, any number of other situations that would make a particular charter or district unique.
The other element here is time. Will these schools and charters have enough time, 5 to 6 weeks, to put their specific plans in place and be ready to go end of August, start of September?
Well, not to be flippant with you, Tom, but the short answer is that's how much time they have, and they've got no choice but to be ready. Fortunately, many districts and charter schools have been working on this since June. Rather than wait for those state working groups to make their recommendations, the districts and charters, many of them anyway, have set up their own task forces, and they've already started to figure out how they might best operate under each of the scenarios. And, what was going on here was that these working group meetings were all public. They were on YouTube, and all the minutes and so on have been posted. So it's been pretty easy for the people at the local level to follow along, see what the thinking is statewide, and start adapting it to their own circumstances. The key here is whenever it is that Governor Carney announces how the schools should operate when they reopen. It could come as early as next week, but the school leaders seem to think that the decision isn't likely to come until the end of the month. And that would give the schools 4 weeks or so to pull all the pieces together under whatever the chosen scenario is. With the work that they've been doing already, that's probably enough time. However, we have learned along the way that we just don't know how the infection rate might change in the next month and a half, and any kind of significant changes in the status of coronavirus in the state is likely to have an impact on how the school's reopening plans are firmed up.
So what are some of the wild cards or challenges that schools and districts face as they kind of get to the devil in the details part of the planning of any kind of in-school learning?
We're looking at a lot of issues that, things that we would really be taking for granted in a normal school year. Okay, now some families, no matter what happens with the coronavirus situation, may just not want their children to go inside a school building while that pandemic threat remains at whatever level. Some teachers and administrators might very well be considered high-risk individuals, and they would benefit from practicing social distancing even if the schools do open normally. So that would mean perhaps special or different assignments for them. Then, of course, will there be enough bus drivers? Now, pandemic or not, that's always a problem. But, if you've got a hybrid reopening, are there going to be enough buses to carry roughly half of the students to school if they can only use every other seat on the bus? And then when you think of this hybrid reopening, if you've got half the class learning in school and the other half learning remotely, how do you create a lesson plan that works for both groups? How do you teach a first grader to read when she's at home watching you on her mother's cell phone? How do you teach first graders to stand in a straight line when they've got to be 6 feet apart? Maybe even worse than that, how do you get dozens of ninth graders to follow the one-way arrows that are going to be marked in the hallways when they're changing classes?
And how much are districts and charters trying to take the temperature of families to see what they want and what they're willing to do?
I can't say that I spoke to enough people to give you a definite on and meaningful how much type of response. But, you know, from listening to the working group meetings and talking to some of the school leaders, it's clear that many of them are taking surveys. You know, they're trying to find out what families liked or didn't like about distance learning in the spring. They're trying to determine what tech devices and internet access is available in just about everyone's home. And, you know, also you can count on definitely having more communication this year from schools to families. They're going to have to spell out the changed procedures for riding buses, different steps for dropping off and picking up children at school, details on how to access the online learning platforms, and most importantly, reminding parents that they're going to have an obligation to check their children's temperatures every morning and to be on the alert every day for any coronavirus symptoms that might pop up.
Of course, at some point, we always wind up when we talk about education getting down to money. And how much of a financial burden is this expected to be on schools, and what state and federal assistance may be available to help them create a new normal?
I can't say for sure how burdensome the finances are going to be, but I suspect that the hybrid operation would be the most costly. So many things will have to be rearranged. You know, there would be two different learning formats. Lunches would have to be delivered to some children's homes. Others might be eating in their classrooms rather than in the cafeteria, and they'll be using packaged meals and plastic utensils. And then you've got all those safety and sanitation items, the PPEs, the hand sanitizer, the cleaning supplies. Now, you know, we don't know how long the virus is going to be a concern. So education officials are going to have to make, well, what we would call educated guesses about spending priorities. Yep, there are going to be some federal funds available. We don't know how far they're going to stretch. In Delaware, that money right now is in two pots. You know, the larger pot has about $39 million in it, and that's been allocated to school districts and charters based on the formula that the federal government uses to determine eligibility for its Title I programs for low-income students. The second pot has about $8 million in it, and that's controlled by the governor. And he said the other day that he intends to award this money to districts and charters through a competitive grants process.
All right, I want to go back to something you alluded to earlier. In the end, this could all change on a dime, depending on how the pandemic plays out in coming months. How ready are schools for a quick pivot?
We really don't know. We're not going to know until that change is actually required. And I think that if we start the school year with the hybrid, it's going to be easier to make a shift either to a full opening or to an all-remote mode rather than starting at either one of those extremes and then having to slip into the hybrid, which is the most confusing of the three to work with. You know, and again, there, you know, another thing to keep in mind is there are going to be situations where, well, you know, maybe something as small as a single classroom could become a hot spot. And maybe then a school would decide, you know, we've just got to shut down that class and quarantine the people in that classroom for a week or perhaps more. Or maybe an issue in a classroom becomes something that's makes it necessary to shut down an entire school. Bottom line here is, you know, the states and the schools are still doing their summer homework, and in another month they're going to know a lot better what they should be doing and have a better idea of how to get it done. What we don't know, however, is going to be how quickly they're going to have to pivot and which way they'll have to turn.
Larry Nightingale, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your reporting. Thanks for joining us on The Green this week.
You're quite welcome, Tom.